They're great words, aren't they? They remind me of how I felt after I'd hurt myself and there was Mum with her arms around me. You know, it's that sort of love, isn't it, that comes through. Even though she was a nurse, and nurses are quite hard characters, and they expect you to fix yourself up. So there was that love, but then, look, go on, it's you know, gaping hole. It'll be all right, don't worry. It'll work itself out. That's right, yes. And I thought I would just finish just a little bit of the story, if you like. And my mother was an only child brought up in Cottesloe, and she became a nurse working at Fremantle Hospital during most of the war years. And she was working with a woman called Helen, and Helen happened to have this really handsome brother. And he was flying... And he was flying bombers in Europe, and he was a Pathfinder pilot, and flying out of England and then out of Italy. There's a moment. Yeah, deep. Helen had this photo on her bedroom mantelpiece. And of course, my mother had to ask her who this handsome guy was. And by the time he came back from the war, miraculously, they got together. She was a church-going person, Cottesloe Church of Christ. She only went because of... the social activities there, but she said to Tom Scotland, come along to church. Unfortunately, she took him to an evangelical crusade. And Dad got hooked. Okay, he became a Christian then and there. He stopped drinking, stopped smoking, and God was the best friend in his life. And Dad, at that stage, was... severely traumatised from the war. It had quite a number of accidents, close misses, that sort of thing. And so he went to the doctor, and the doctor told him to drink more beer. He was searching, and even during the war he was searching for meaning as he was flying over the Italian Alps. You can imagine it, beautiful moonlit skies, glinting off the snow, and he's due to go in and bomb the Vienna rail yards or wherever and risk his life. And he was thinking, how does all this work? So when he came back, he was open and ready for the message of God. And so he gave his life to Christ at that stage. And he came back and went to university, became a civil engineer on a Commonwealth scholarship, and he had the... joy of building roads across the Wellington Dam and road to Bunbury, and also the first road over the Narrows Bridge down to Stirling Bridge, down to Canning Bridge. And I had the pleasure of riding the back of his main roads department ute before the road was open, so that was fun. And then they became increasingly committed to God. They saw that they saw the binary nature. You know, you're either saved or you're not. That was how they were brought up, and a lot of us have experienced that and probably discovered that perhaps that may not be the way that God wants us to live, but very binary. So they then went off to a Bible college in Tasmania, sold everything. Dad had this great job in the main roads department as an engineer, sold everything, went to Tasmania for 2 years with three boys in tow, and did his Bible study training, and then thought, OK, it's time to go to overseas. Three boys. One's 12, 10, 8 at the time, or a little bit younger. And so they get accepted into this worldwide evangelisation crusade. Some of you may have heard of WEC. OK, here's their motto. If Jesus Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice can be too great for me to make for him. How's that? That's written, put together by a guy called C.T. Studd. Anyone heard of C.T. Studd? What's he most famous for, Ross? Yes, yeah, and before that, the Congo. And before that, he was in the English cricket team. And he came out to Australia. Played cricket against Australia with the English cricket, with the Ashes. Was it the Ashes then, in the 1800s, 1890s? So he, and he put this together, a man of huge sacrifice, huge commitment. But of course, turns it round into this sort of thing, and I think we could spend the rest of our time here exploring what this does for us, I think. So here they are. They committed themselves to it. And of course, there's no money, as in nothing regular coming in. It's a life of faith, trusting God. And even the mission has a policy of not even letting people know what your needs are. So we lived for a good 12 years or 14 years that way. And I never went without a meal, and I had reasonable clothes, and I think I had quite an exciting life. And in fact, I discovered during my time, we lived in a missionary headquarters in Sydney, and there would be missionaries coming backwards and forwards from mission fields on furlough. And I was meeting these amazing people. You know, Dr. Stuart Harvison was working in the highlands of South Vietnam and doing medical work with the Americans, you know, during the Vietnam War. And he'd come home, they'd come home, he and his beautiful wife. And part of what they'd need to do was to do gardening out in the grounds of the headquarters there in Strathfield in Sydney. So I'd go out and start chatting with them, and I'd learn just from his point of view what was happening in other parts of the world. And there were people from Afghanistan. There were women who had been tortured and raped by the Simbas in Africa who we'd just spend time with. And I was getting this personal exposure to life, I guess, you know, in other parts of the world. So I felt really... didn't realise at the time, but looking back, it was a very fortunate sort of childhood in that way. But the unfortunate was getting introduced to this binary nature of God. You're either in or you're out. You're right or you're wrong. And I found that increasingly difficult as life went on. What have we got next? Oh, there they are. They retired from the WEC organisation, and my father wrote a couple of books and spent the next 10 years of his life exploring what the war meant for him, and also doing the great thing that my mother was good at, which was connecting with people and connecting with a lot of the friends they'd made during their missionary lives, but also selling a lot of books. Amazing. You know, speaking of Rotary clubs and those sorts of things. And with both of my parents, and particularly as we're talking about mothers today, my mother was, as you've probably gathered, a person who just, which is like a hen, you know, would just gather people around her, and we'd have people in the home who were disadvantaged, particularly girls who were having a lot of trouble, having difficulties. A lot of homeless young people would come into our home, and she was just like a mother hen and just be looking after them, and it was just wonderful. And that's how she treated us too, except when we're injured, of course. I want us to consider mothering a little bit more and just enter into a time of thinking about it a little bit more broadly than we have perhaps been thinking about it. And I've asked Carol, to lead us in a meditation around mothering. And Carol, did you want to do it from there or out here? I think it might be easier out here, mightn't it, with the microphone. Now, you've all got a sheet there, and I'll just hand over to Karen.
Oh, that's all right. Please join in on the dark sections at the end of each sentence. The wide spectrum of mothering. To those who gave birth this year to their first child, we celebrate with you. To those who are in the trenches with little ones every day and wear the badges of food stains and sleepless nights, we appreciate you. To those who are guiding their children through the sometimes complex teenage years, we honour and support you. To those who lost a child before, during, or after birth, we mourn with you. To those who experience loss through miscarriage, failed adoptions, or running away, we mourn with you. To those who are foster mums, mentor mums, spiritual mums, and grandmothers mothering their grandchildren, we need you and honour you today. To those who have warm and close relationships with your children, we celebrate with you. To those who have lost their mothers, To those who have disappointment, heartache, and distance with your children, we sit with you. To those who have lost their mothers, you are not alone, we grieve with you. To those whose mothers could not give the love and care you needed, we acknowledge your experience. To those who have lived through driving tests, medical tests, and the overall testing of motherhood, we are better for having you in our midst. To those who are childless and long to mother your own children, we mourn that life has not turned out the way you longed for it to be. To those who step parent, we walk with you on these complex paths. To those who will have emptier nests in the upcoming year, we grieve and rejoice with you. To those who place children up for adoption, we commend you for your selflessness and remember how you hold that child in your heart. And to those who are pregnant with new life, both expected and surprising, we anticipate with you. This Mother's Day, we walk with you. Mothering is not for the faint of heart, and we have real worries in our midst. We remember, love, and honour you today.
Messiness of our lives. Life's a little messy, isn't it? Some people try to put it into neat little boxes, nice and neatly, but I'm happy with messiness. And I think I sent out a request to my extended family for any writings or poetry that they had about mothering. And this is what I got back from my eldest daughter. Mums are best. We do everything. I love the kids, but damn, I need a rest for like a year. I thought that was great. And I did a critical analysis for her as well. Particularly the unintended rhyme and the colloquialisms. And the contrasting of the of the joy of our lives and the suburbanism of our lives. It was great fun. Now, I just want us to draw our attention just to a couple of biblical mothers for a moment, and then I'd like us to spend a little bit of time just thinking a little bit more about our own mothers. And you may like to turn over to the card, to the second part of the card, because there's some of the questions that or ideas I'd love you to start thinking about in terms of your mother. But I'm wondering if we can think about Jochebed. We've just had the story of Jochebed told to us by Fred, by Bevan. And I'm wondering, as we think about what is it that took someone like Jochebed to offer to look after Moses as the maid. In fact, gave Moses away, but offered to be the maid. What does that take?
Okay. Well, the first reason that why she was qualified to do that was very obvious. She was still nursing that baby.
Mm. Yeah, she was a nursing mother.
A Jewish faith.
Mm.
Faith is transferred by a mother's womb to the infant. So there's a
little
Jewish
substance
text in the story.
Yes. Okay, that's...
How important it was.
Can everyone hear, Karen? No, so...
Yeah.
Was she like the nanny of the baby? Was that she was still nursing him? And in Jewish culture, faith is transferred via the mother's milk to the baby. So there's some Jewish subtext in the story there.
What else would it take? What's the heart? What's at the heart of what Jochebed was doing?
Saving her son's
life. And sacrificing herself in some way to be able to do that, but also gaining from it by being able to be close to her son. But we see such love, such intensity in that whole scenario, don't we? In that mothering that was there. Another interesting... You know, as I've been looking at mothers, I'm not an expert in this area. I haven't read all the books or anything like that. I've just been thinking about... mothers, and it's interesting that and curious that as I looked at Eve, and Eve did something that she raised quite a lot of children, actually, didn't she? Yes. But it's curious how in the Bible story she's been allocated the responsibility for the sins of the world. I find that really curious. As I do, the story of Rebecca. Remember Rebecca? Whose wife was she? She was Isaac's wife. Remember Isaac, Abraham's son? And Isaac met Rebecca. They had two children. What were their names? Do you remember? Jacob and Esau. Jacob and Esau. And Jacob became the father of... the Israelites, yes. Now, it's interesting, Esau was the eldest and therefore was the one who was, by law or and by tradition, allocated the birthright for everything that Isaac had. And really the lineage for Israel should have come down through Esau. But Rebecca did something. Do you remember what she did? Go on, Ken.
Well, she put a goat hair skin on the back of Jacob. Because Esau was hairy.
Yes.
And then Isaac's sight was failing, so held his son, ran his hands over the back, and that's right.
And thought he was blessing Esau.
Yeah. So he thought he was blessing Esau and not Jacob.
Not Jacob. And in fact, he was blessing Jacob. And through that... manipulation, deceit. And we have this incredible beginning of the Jewish race seated in deceit. What did Esau go off and do, and what has come from Esau? Who, pardon? Canaanites? So? Yeah. The Palestinians, yes. And so we tend to now have that division between Palestinian Israelites and some of the tension that's happening in the Eastern in the Middle East. We can take right back to the story about Jacob and Esau. Rebecca, what was the motivation? What was happening there? What's the mother instinct or the mother thinking that's happening there? Why would she favour one son over another son? Yeah. What?
Because of the story that when Esau came in from hunting, he was so hungry, he said, I'd give my birthright to Mrs. Pottage, and she said, oh, well,
I'll organise that for you.
So
Yes.
Then I'll organise for
that's right.
Jacob said so in that, in a sense, it was his fault.
Yes, that he was happy to let it go in one sense. Yes, and Rebecca's there facilitating that. Yes, quite interesting, isn't it?
The sense coming into his family is going to be the one of many nations. So she had this sense that the children were going to be important. She had two sons, and one was a bit of a no-hoper. And he was the one who was meant to be leading this promise that he'd been told. You might feel a bit of responsibility to twiddle the order.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Our mythology of what a mother is like. A mother is meant to be the all-accepting, unconditional love. And I don't know how this fits into our story of how a mother loves all her children equally. This doesn't fit.
Yes, yes. John.
You can love all your children equally, but also recognise that some of them have gifts that the others don't have.
Yes. Is that the message that we get from this?
You could love Esau by not letting him take on a job he can't.
That he wasn't qualified for or that he couldn't do. Yeah. And maybe didn't have the character for it. Yeah. It's a great message, isn't it, that we can get about Rebecca. It can seem, that whole story can seem like it's going that way and that she was a manipulative woman, which in one sense he used her she had manipulative powers of influence, but the same way we see wisdom coming through it.
John, I'd like to say that mothers are human too and we make mistakes.
Mm, yeah. And
I'm
so
not judging Rebecca, I'm just
yes, yes.
Saying that as a mother.
Yes. And we go back to Paul's point about that the God principle that comes through for us here is that it could have been a terrible mistake that she made. We only know that in the power of hindsight, isn't it? And that the whole principle that God gives us is around loving and caring for each other equally. Very, very important, but not denying the wisdom that we have.
Let me go out on a limb here. This doesn't sound like a mother story to me. This sounds like a father story. This sounds like something a guy would make up. And one of the reasons why I think that, one, it doesn't fit my understanding of mothers loving all of their children. It does fit the conniving that a father might or a male figure might, and I'll put that out there. The other thing is, what kind of man would mistake human back hair for a goat? What doofus would do that? This is the kind of thing a guy would make up.
Okay. Now, the question, now we're starting to open up hornet, lovely hornet's nest here. And the interesting thing, Paul actually introduced me recently to a wonderful book by Eric Siebert called The Disturbing Behaviours of God. Has anyone had a chance to read that? Yeah, just wonderful. And it's really opened a sense of how do we really know about the validity of a lot of the stories in the Old Testament and how they, when we start looking at them closely, how historical, how much do they actually reflect the difference between the words of God and the action of God. And this is one thing that I've been drawn to, is that it is a little bit curious as we read through the Old Testament. It's curious just how there are things happening which we don't really fully understand. And we can manipulate things if we want to. I think of... there's a whole range of things that God has been accused of doing in the Old Testament through the writings, isn't there? And so Siebert's very clear message to us is to always look at God in the Old Testament through Jesus, through the eyes of Jesus, and just start to distinguish the writings from the action. the writings from the action. And I'm really enjoying that. It's a journey for me, and I imagine many in this room have probably thought about that a little bit more than I have. But I'm enjoying that whole idea, the lens of Jesus, as we look back at what's happened in the Old Testament, because we know how difficult it is for us to really understand the veracity and so on of certain Old Testament passages and actions that have been described there. Everyone's going quiet. And I'm just enjoying this whole notion of looking at Jesus in a different way, and particularly understanding God through Jesus, and particularly through the Beatitudes, and understanding Jesus through the Beatitudes. And I'd like to just have a quick read of of Mary's song, Luke 1. My heart is overflowing with praise of my Lord. My soul is full of joy in God my Saviour, for he has deigned to notice me as humble servant. And after this, all the people who ever shall be will call me the happiest of women. The one who can do all things has done great things for me. Oh, holy is his name. Truly his mercy rests on those who fear him in every generation. He has shown the strength of his arm. He has swept away the high and mighty. He has set kings down from their thrones and lifted up the humble. He has satisfied the hungry with good things and sent the rich away with empty hands. Yes, he has helped Israel, his child, has remembered the mercy that he promised to our forefathers, to Abraham and his sons forever. And what I see coming through Mary's song there is just that affirmation of what Jesus came through later around the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes, particularly around he's shown his strength of arm, he's swept away the high and mighty, he's set kings down from their thrones. And we just see how Jesus came in and totally reversed the sense of power, the sense of corruption, and how he reversed that and basically replaced it with his love and with love. And turning a lot of the self-serving empowerment that we try to give ourselves on its head. And that's how I like to look at a lot of the stories back in the Old Testament that way. I'd like you to have a look at those cards that I've given to you in the next few minutes. We won't be able to do everything I thought we could do today, but that often happens here, doesn't it? And I'd like you to start considering a number of those questions and to think about particularly what... there are probably two main questions there that I'd like you to think about. The one is, what are the qualities of my mother that I have chosen to take forward into my life? Yeah. What are the qualities of my mother that I've chosen to take forward into my life? And then, secondly, can someone give me one of their cards? Thank you. The second one is you discovered certain qualities about God through your mother. Can you just think about those? What I'd like you to do is just have a quick chat with the person next to you about those two questions. Then I'm just going to get some feedback from you, from those who are happy to share those thoughts. Now, some of us may have chosen, in fact, identified qualities in our mother that we didn't want to take forward into our own life, and this told us a lot more about God. And we may want to talk about those. Can I ask that you just have a conversation with a person next to you, near you, just about those two items on that card?
All right, everyone. Can we come back together again, please? So could we just get some feedback about those qualities or behaviours or any aspect of our mothers that we chose to take on into our lives, that they demonstrated to us, like, you know, doing the washing, taking on into the rest of our lives? What are some really notable things that we wanted to take forward in our lives? Yes. What are the qualities you're taking forward into your life that you definitely got from your mother?
Forgiveness of others.
Forgiveness of others, yeah.
Acceptance of differences.
Acceptance of differences, yes. Anyone else identify with that? Yeah, I can. Yeah.
Steadfastness.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah? Just being pig-headed enough. Okay, folks.
Is that right, Malin?
But it's also, I think, a steadfastness. It's prepared to stand up and not get knocked over.
Okay. And staying true to whatever your goal is or your what you're determined to do.
Stand up.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yeah. What's another quality that you'd take forward?
The belief that things can get better if you work at it.
The belief that things can get better if you work at it. Anyone else have that from their mother? That's a just get up and show your face. Probably a little bit like Ken's in a way, isn't it? Get up, show your face and keep going. Yes, something will work out. Sorry, someone had a hand up over there. Tyson. So the responsibility for yourself and your environment.
Because it was, that certainly just the domestic nature of looking after yourself. Fathering was outside the house, that was the garden.
Oh, okay. So mothering was inside,
so
largely.
Practical day-to-day living was from mum.
Michael.
Fostering.
And this is your mother with your children.
With us and with our children.
So helping them dream a little bit bigger.
And treating them seriously.
Wonderful.
Compassion for the poor.
Compassion for the poor. First. And then think of the Biafrans, or think of the poor.
That's right. Think about someone other than yourself. There are people suffering in the world. I don't know about geography. So, you know, other kids have got over their head. I took it to heart and wanted to work out who these starving Biafrans were. They weren't speaking time. And I know that came from the other bit I wrote about, which is these universal values.
That's really opening your mind to God.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Cool.
A simple thing, the love of cooking. Cooking is so much more than just cooking, because apart from loving that visceral feel of making things, it's the joy of then sharing what you've cooked, because it brings people together, it enables conversations,
it creates great memories, and I've seen Mum do that again and again, and that's one of the things that's a great love for me, is not just the act of cooking, but then being able to share that. Yes, food is the soul. My mother was a hopeless cook, but she loved bringing people together, so as long as they brought their own stuff, she'd supply some pretty... She'd try and put stuff on. She'd generally buy it and do the normal scones and jam. That was about it. All right. Let's just move, in closing off, just the things that we've learnt about God from our mothers. Just one thing we learnt about God from our mothers. What I'd like to do is just start over here and just move through. If you'd like to say something... Yeah, what have you learned about God from your mothers? In addition, I guess we should actually reflect just for a moment. We've got a lot of things here that are indicative of God, is that right? Up on the board? Yeah. Is there anything additional we can add to that?
Patience.
About the things we've learned about God? God's patience. Say again, right? Listening. Yeah. God's a listener. No. Yeah. God just doesn't go and tell you to make your bed.
The sense of the love you can always come home to. The all-embracing, forgiving love that you can always come home to, I got from my mother. But it's been a long journey in my adult years of making that sense of that love be the love I associate with God, because God's always been talked about to me as a father, and the love I received from my father, who loved me very much, was not the all-embracing, forgiving love you come home to. And that sense of that love being the love of God is a journey I'm still on. And we were reflecting on this last night because our children were meant to be having a sleepover at Tyson's parents last night. And we got the phone call that Eden wasn't settling. He was sick. He wanted us to come and get him. And almost all of his day-to-day experience of love is through Tyson mothering him at home in terms of traditional how we would talk about mothering. And yet he wanted me. And it felt like he just wanted to crawl back into the womb, and that had to be me. And my sense of God as when it all gives up and I've got to crawl back into the womb, that God is that womb to crawl back to, is a mother love. And it's still a journey for me to be able to think and experience God as the mother love.
When we look at a lot of these qualities here, does a masculine idea come through, or more of a feminine idea? Beg your pardon? Both. Mm. Yes. Say again, Paul?
In my family, both.
Both, yes. It's strange. Some of us may have had families where it was clearly delineated. Dad... Someone said Dad did the outside, Mum did the inside. Tyson. Yeah. And Dad's shoulders, yes. Yeah. And this is the beauty, and what we find in God is both mother and father, isn't it? And again, as I grew up, I was only told God was masculine, God was father. But as I've had the joy of just rediscovering God over these last few years, I guess, getting a sense of God's mothering qualities, his female qualities, and how much that is important for our own lives and for our own joy and success in our relationships and in our lives. And that's been a wonderful realisation for me. So I'm loving what we're writing here. I think we should leave it up. Someone should take a photograph and email that around, shouldn't someone?
Yep.
We have...
Even begin to think about approaching the concept of God. Because I think how
Is there anything you'd like to say about how we can... You just want that to be a thought for us at the moment, a meditation for us?
Yeah.
Yeah, a reflection.
How would you phrase it, please, Kat?
Oh, she said it. No, that's fine. Just help us to think about that. Yeah. All right. Well, we've probably approached time for caffeine. Would that be right? And I would like to finish on... we've talked about them. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? As we've talked about mothers and mother love, this was a quote that I came across, and I thought, yes, there's a lot in that. In that the normal human being to do impossible things, we need to access a lot of these parts of us, don't we, in order for us to do the impossible. I don't think it's limited to mother love, of course, but generally we've ignored, if we keep the masculine feminine in our minds, we think you've got to be tough, you've got to be... you've always got to win, you know, taking a lot of those more extreme masculine components, which have been in our society for many years, we lose a lot of the joy of connection. And what's happening there? Anyway. So, in finishing off today, I'm wondering if we could all stand. And we've had a chance today, I trust, to really reflect on our mothers particularly, or our mother, the mothering we've experienced in our lives. And I'm wondering if we can just move now just to a moment just of gratefulness, just expressing, if you'd just like to close your eyes or just take a moment of meditation and reflection. And just a moment of gratefulness, thanking God for the mothering you've experienced in whatever form it came, or what you learnt from the mothering if it wasn't the sort of mothering that suited you, and what you've learnt from that and how grateful you are, and just thanks to God for that. And I'll just close in about 15 seconds.